listening to Female VC Lab, a podcast that showcases the journeys of female investors. My name is Barbara Bickham, and I am an award-winning CTO and VC that teaches companies and investors about emerging technology. I am sitting down with female VCs and investors to talk about their funds, how they invest, and how they make an impact. Welcome to the Female VC Lab podcast. Jessica, in one line, give me your name, your title, and the name of your fund.
I am Jess Ma, and I am the founder and head honcho of Maway.
Wonderful. So what inspired you to become a venture capitalist or an investor?
I've been doing a lot of angel investing when I was operating and running my own company. So I started my career out of UC Berkeley. Go Bears.
Go Bears.
And, yeah, the best. And yes. I always knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I never wanted to work for the man or woman or
you didn't work
whoever.
Want to work for the human.
Yeah, whatever, exactly.
Or the AI, actually.
Whoever the human is, I didn't want to work for them.
Awesome.
And I studied computer science in college.
Ah, so that we have that in common as well.
Hell yeah.
I did as well. Computer science from Berkeley.
Yeah, and that was definitely a fun major there.
That was fun. You guys got the easy one.
Yeah, I heard.
Oh, it was hard. That CS killed a lot of people.
Yeah.
They broke that one up. They broke that one up after we went through it. They're like, oh no, we have to make this too. We're looking at that going, what?
It's hard for me. It must have been torture for you. So anyway, I did that. And I was CEO for over 10 years. I grew my first company in Dinero to a few hundred employees. And I thought in my head, how great would it be to run a company that could be a public company or be massive. And then I realized that's just really my ego speaking. And I didn't actually want to do that. And
wow.
Fast forward. Yeah.
You know what? That's interesting. I hate to interrupt on the podcast.
Sure.
But you know what? I appreciate that you said that. You said, my ego said that to me. Like there are a few other people whose egos wouldn't, like they would just allow their ego to continue.
I know it's difficult to disconnect like ego versus what is my truth and what am I good at? My ego wanted me to be CEO of a massive company.
A big public company.
Whatever. Yeah, exactly. But inside I knew that was not the path I wanted. If I already felt full and amazing, I wouldn't want to do that. But you go to these cocktail mixers, you go to these like CEO dinners. And it becomes a sense of, for me at least, it was a huge sense of my identity, who I was. It's like, okay, so what's your, what you just did? What's your name? What's your title? What's your company? What do you do? How big is your company? And I got onto that treadmill.
That but
I
also felt wheel.
The hamster wheel, exactly.
Yes, that hamster wheel, because that is a hamster wheel. We all have our own versions of it, right? VCs.
We do, and we manufacture in our head. Of course, no one else is thinking about our hamster wheel except for ourselves. But I also realized that just angel investing wasn't that fun either, because angel investing, I was putting in 25, 50K checks. I'm like, what's a cool hybrid of building a portfolio, having impact? How can I design this in a way that makes me feel impactful, excited? Mm-hmm. And I still wanted to build, but I didn't want to be CEO. And I had capital I could invest with. So I created this interesting investing structure, which is now what I do at Maway, where we actually have a whole team that comes up with new businesses. We identify all the problems in the world that we'd like to solve in software, fintech, biotech. We're funding antibiotic development, for example, like crazy stuff.
We need some new antibiotics.
Oh, hell yeah, we do. And
there's a lot of antibiotic resistant people, right? Because we overprescribe.
It's going to be a real problem. And so there's a huge problem. There's a list of dozens of things like that where no one else is really funding it. Because as a normal investor, I think a lot of investors and VCs, they get deal flow sent to them by email. So they're very reactive. Yeah. And so for me, the question is, what could I be proactive about? If this deal existed, what would I want to invest in that I don't have active deal flow for? And then I'll construct those deals with my team.
And you'll create that yourself.
Correct. And then we'll find the right management team, bring them in, say, hey, if you run this company, we will fund it. We'll bring in other co-investors to also fund it. And we're going to obviously have a bigger stake here because we're not just investing in a company that you brought to the table. We started this company.
Well, you're actively creating it. That's exactly.
Like
a slightly different configuration than the traditional VC as well.
Exactly. And we don't think about it in a traditional VC structure where, okay, if we want to raise a fund and then have a certain IRR, and then we're really taking a step back and thinking about in terms of what would be fun, interesting, exciting, and impactful for the world. And then they'll just so happen to also make a lot of capital. And so it's just a slightly different perspective on it.
Slightly, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
I love that.
That's what we do in a nutshell.
Awesome. So you talked a little bit about kind of the types of companies you invest in, your thesis. So can you expand on that a little bit more?
Yeah, we have a few different strategies. We have a fintech and software strategy that we'll look at. We also do a lot of biotech stuff. So we have bold biotech, more incremental biotech, stuff that if it got FDA approved could help hundreds of thousands of people or millions of people. And so different teams for different strategies. We're launching a private equity buyout strategy right now as well. And so our goal is really to be like a Vista or like a Cerberus or a TPG, a multi-strategy platform investment firm. We think of ourselves more like private equity meets VC meets venture creation, all had a baby.
Oh, wow.
That's what we are.
That's awesome. That's great.
Yeah. And so the question I have for a lot of other folks looking at being in venture is, how do you differentiate yourself and create more value? Because there are so many investors out there now. It's like capital is truly a commodity now, you know?
That's the truth. And like you said, what is the true differentiator? Right?
And for LPs, right?
You do need that. You do need those extra elements, right? You need the slight PE side. You need, if you're going for, I like the idea of venture creation, right? I'm creating this as a problem I see in the world that no one else is solving. And you actually need semi the fund piece. The value add to LPs and to potential companies is that because you're creating your own ecosystem in essence. So creating your own ecosystem is a powerful thing because it's something that will be completely unique to you. Other people couldn't necessarily come in and go, okay, now I'm going to pull out, right? Like people will look and see, oh, maybe I should try this myself as a startup, but as like a venture person, it will be harder to come in and say, okay, how do I now pick out of your portfolio? It would be very difficult because you're creating that, your ecosystem yourself. And that's a powerful thing.
Yeah.
And you're not going to see a lot of those, right? You're not going to see a ton of what you're doing because you're actually creating it.
Exactly. Right? That's right. So we're working on things that we think other people are not working on, and where it's just an opportunity that's a little bit off the beaten path. So you're not going to see a lot of competition for it. Mm-hmm. So instead of being a picker and looking at the 10 top companies in the space and determining which one should I back or which two or three should I back, and just pray and pray. It's okay. There's no other company doing this. Mm-hmm. We're going to be the only play. So the real question is, will we be successful or will we not be successful? And if we could have influence on who the management team is and who the CEO is, we're more likely to have a win.
And that is a form of picking, right? The reality is that is a form of selection.
Yes.
It doesn't matter if you created the company or someone else created the company. You're still betting in those early phases in the venture building part of it on the founders and the management team in the beginning. It is a form of selection. It's just you're creating the rest of the wrapper around it.
You got it. You totally understand it.
Yeah, I get that. It makes sense to me.
It's just more work. I think that's why a lot of people don't want to do this. It's harder to raise outside capital for the strategy.
Yes.
And if you're the manager, you're not like on vacation. Like this is like an 80-hour a week type of job.
It's a 24/7 a week job. Because there's so many levels of things that could occur.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's also equally rewarding and interesting, right? Because if, like you said, if you knock some of these out of the park, you're have global impact on. If you're doing antibiotics or you're doing a lot in the biotech space and you're trying to solve some of the problems of aging or other things like that, that could impact millions of billions of people.
Oh, totally. Right? Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And yeah, I think I am meeting more people who are pursuing a creation strategy. And it's actually a really interesting pivot for people who used to be an operator, who used to run a company. And they go through a similar journey that I went through, which is, okay, do I want to be an operator again? Or do I want to be a venture capitalist or family office, sit on my own person? And then they land on this. But you know what? I could be an operator and an investor at the same time.
Yeah.
And create more value this way. And it's for people who are not ready to retire yet, sit on the beach.
They want true.
They want to push.
They want to play in the pool still.
Yeah, exactly.
No, and that makes sense. It makes sense to me because if based on some people I've been speaking with, that model makes sense because are you just going to be a family office? Then you're basically doing what a VC is doing. And then there's so many aspects of what you're saying. And do you really just want to go off and retire? Most people, like I have a friend and he's doing well for himself. But is he really ready to retire? I don't think so. He's still too young to retire. So like, exactly. How do you mix that? How do you mesh that without becoming like a passive investor? And that's what I'll say, like a passive investor. Like most people are not going to be passive investors anyway. If they're deploying capital, they're going to have they're going to at least want some information from you at some point in time. They're not 100% yeah. passive. That's not really a thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I totally agree with everything you said. I love this. I hope more people do this. And yeah, it's awesome.
What are you currently learning or listening to or reading these days, Jeff?
So let's start with the high level. What am I learning about?
Yes.
I love meeting with other capital allocators. So people mm-hmm. who run a billion-dollar plus AUM family office and just talking to them about how they think about capital. I love meeting with other people who built holding companies. So basically like mini Berkshire Hathaways. Mm-hmm. So one thing that I love doing is I meet these people through a friend and then I'll just literally fly out. I'll get on the plane, meet them for dinner and then fly back that night or the next day. And I find that it's just a better way to learn things than reading or podcasts.
That, like sometimes if I could that's meet, true. Sometimes these people are, I'll say reclusive. Right.
Yeah, they
don't necessarily want to be found. And like you said, hey, they're not necessarily going to get on they may get on a phone call. It's a physical phone call, but it is more impressive to meet them in person. And like you said, then you can ask them different kind of questions.
Yeah, exactly.
And meet them face to face because they do still like that as well.
It's totally different. Yeah. I really don't love Zoom. I'm glad we got to connect here and do this today, but yeah,
well, we're podcasting on the Zoom.
Exactly. Exactly.
But you're here in LA, so we can meet in person.
Exactly. I know. If I had known that, I'd just drive over. But I'm trying to also not just read and learn about business stuff, but I think a lot of entrepreneurs, myself included, wake up 10 years into the journey and think, wow, I've been really working a lot, but do I have the other parts of my life figured out? Like
there you go.
My hobbies, my personal life, like what's there the meaning go. Of life? What are my thoughts on spirituality? Like, how do I like fill my cup in other ways?
And that's very important.
Right. And why this is important is because if we're too fixated on a deal or business, we're going to make worse decisions as investors, as operators. Like we're in our radar to figuring out who we should work with, who we should invest in, who we should back. Is not going to be dialed in properly if we're living off of 4 hours of sleep. And
how do you, I would say it this way, how do you become a well-rounded as an individual? So when we're having conversations, do you only want to just have conversations about deals? Is that the only thing you can have conversations about?
Right.
Is that it? What other things can you really have a conversation about? What other things are you doing? What other things do you like? What other things do you enjoy? And so how do you become that well-rounded person? And that includes physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally. What does that look like for you? Who else are you helping? I have philanthropic efforts. I like watching my movies. I do have other things I do. This podcast is one, amplifying voices, right? That's important as well. But what are those other things that make you well-rounded? Very important.
Oh, totally. It also helps with attracting great people to work with.
Of course.
I get a ton of deals done on the airplane. I literally say, hey, get on my jet. Let's go somewhere for lunch. And then we'll fly back, go for dinner. Like
there you go.
Something like that. And I'll pilot it. I'll put them in the co-pilot seat. Saturday, I got someone who I do some business with and also love as a friend. And we're going to take one of my cars out for a drive and with 15 other exotic cars and just like cruise through Malibu. Stuff like that where...
Hopefully Malibu will be cruisable on the weekend.
Yeah. No,
considering it's been a lot of rain.
I know. It'll be fine. And
the bottom of the PCH maybe.
Yeah. No, we'll check that for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I totally agree with you. Need to have a multi-dimensional life.
I mean, because we're multi-dimensional people, right? We're not just only business. Like we do have other things that we do. Like you said, sleep, exercise. There's other things that we do in life. It sounds like you've done a lot of travel is another thing that I think that as founders and is as much as you want to stay in your little hole, it's good to go and experience other places, other people, other areas, because you learn a lot about people in general when you're traveling around.
Definitely.
That the world is really a bigger place than just the United States or just Los Angeles or just your little local area, which is fine. Not saying anything wrong with anyone's local area, but it does open up some thinking around when I was here, they did these things differently or when I was here, right? But you have that practical experience to draw off of as well.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think also as a capital allocator, so there are a few dimensions here. You could talk to people who are in different places, also different countries, right? Learning about investing in Asia versus Europe versus the US, I think creates a lot of perspective. People from different sized funds, family offices, and then separately different verticals. If you're learning about biotech investing and deep tech investing and AI investing and then private equity and real estate investing, like I've been able to cross so many ideas between each of these different strategies together. And that's definitely made me better at what I do. I think a lot of venture investors don't do that. They just stick with venture and software, and that is really limiting.
That doesn't make you well-rounded either, right? Because like you said, what's happening in the PE world could impact the venture world, or what's happening in real estate could impact the venture world, or what's happening across verticals, right? Because we have, for example, I'm about to go down to this bank meeting, which is a board meeting, but they're talking a lot about how do we do digital transformation in Latin America, right? So they're still having those conversations. So why? The question is, why are they still having these conversations? What do they need to do to move the needle in their countries? Because this is like these countries are coming for this in order to have that occur. And are they afraid of AI, right? Is that going to be a part of the conversation in the digital transformation this year? It's going to be very interesting as to what are they thinking in that region?
Totally. Yeah.
But without going to that, how would you know? Like you said, if you're not talking to other funds that are down there or having activity there, how would you know?
Yeah. I can agree more with that. I'm headed to Singapore and Hong Kong on Saturday, and I'm just super excited to get some new ideas out there. And
I love Hong Kong. I thought Hong Kong was so great.
Oh my God. Yeah. I love it.
I haven't been to Singapore yet, though. Need to go there.
I think Singapore is great from an investing perspective. There's so many family offices based there and really sophisticated allocators. I'm trying to go there like once a quarter just to get ideas and connections. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the bonus question.
Sure.
I think you've answered it. In 2 years when we're talking, but we'll be talking before then, how do you see venture capital or investing having changed or evolved?
I think that a lot of the amateur venture investors who try to put together a fund with little effort, who aren't looking to institutionalize and treat this as like a 30-year career, they're going to get wiped out because LPs see so many, they're looking at so many GPs and looking at so many funds, and there's not going to back these funds again. So I think that's one thing that's going to change. I think we're going to see more venture creation strategy.
That's interesting.
I'm already seeing it. I meet with a lot of people here who are new to it, but it's not
well publicized. I see this as well, working with some people in that area as well. Not just like you have to have that piece of it, honestly.
Yeah.
I think you have to have that piece of it.
Yeah. And lastly, I think a lot of family offices are realizing that they need to pick up their capital and professionalize and
Professionalize
brand themselves, not as a family office when they're doing PE and venture investing, so they don't have this adverse selection on deal flow issue. And they're getting better at this. I'm seeing more FOs get better at this. And
some are really good and then some are less good, right? It all depends. It goes back to your comment before. What if you're a family and you've had an exit, right? You potentially only have the knowledge of that one area that you were in. So now you have to go and educate yourself across multiple areas, which there's nothing wrong with that. But that potentially could have a, like, you might have invested in something that you really didn't understand because you didn't go to take the effort to learn about it a little bit. That's it.
Yeah, for sure.
But that's why we're here, to help educate them and help them. No, that's a part of why we're here, is allocators and potential allocators and funds and PE. They do need, we should be helping them go, look, this is how you can help, we can help you professionalize. This is how we can help you understand these other areas. That's it.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
They can share as well.
Yeah, no, I love talking to other FO leads and sharing ideas here. Yeah, thanks for inviting me on here.
How do people contact you, Jess?
They can email teamjess@maway.com and then they'll set something up.
All right. Thank you so much, Jess Ma from Maway, for being my guest on the Female VC Lab Podcast.
Hey.
This episode is brought to you by Trailin Ventures. Find and invest in the next billion-dollar emerging tech company. Sign up for our exclusive content at https://trailin.com to find out more. Find us on Apple, on Spotify, and on Google Podcasts. Thank you for listening.